Titus chapter 1, we have one of the many sections on elders, outlining the whole idea of what an overseer is, verse 7. I just want to reference the word here, verse 7, a bishop or an overseer must be blameless as the steward of God. Now, that is the word that we've been looking at. We've been looking at stewardship and heritage or allocated portions to steward. Here, the local church overseers are described as stewards of God, God's stewards in the local church. Across to 1 Peter, please, in chapter 5. And we'll really settle down here for the meeting. 1 Peter chapter 5. In verse 1, the elders which are among you, I exhort, who am also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed or shepherd, it's the word pastor. As we would often hear it referred to, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples or examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not. And we're thankful to God for his good word. Of all the stewardships we've thought about over the weekend, of money that all of us have some stewardship over, and of family which many or most have stewardship over, and then gift that we thought about yesterday, we come to an area that is exceedingly precious. And we're thinking of local church leadership, the elders of a local church described in steward terms. Now, not all of you in the audience will be elders, but you all need to know what an elder is and what an elder should be doing, so that, first of all, you will know that when they're doing what they should do, that they're right to be doing it. And secondly, that you might appreciate the weight of ministry that is theirs and maybe just rein back a little bit on the criticism. Now, you're all looking very holy, as if you'd never think a thing against your leaders. But the flesh is the flesh. Submission to authority, and we'll think about that in our meeting today, is not something that comes natural to the flesh. It's a spiritual thing. And so all of us that are called to lead in local church capacity have a stewardship to bear among God's people, and we need understanding. That's the call of Hebrews 13. We'll get there. There's an account to be given, and the saints have to understand that account's to be given, and they're to respond to the fact that account's to be given. So we trust this will be an encouraging time. Perhaps enlightening most of the subjects we've been dealing with, we've been covering the surface of them, and so lots of the truth is not new. But we've tried to land something of the weight of them in our sessions, and we'll try and do that again today. Those of you who shepherd, you've a huge impact upon God's people. I think I can safely say that you don't realize how significant an impact you have. I want to think about the issue of shepherding under four headings, and we'll think first of all about the atmosphere of shepherding. And I'm going to use the word shepherding. I'm going to do that deliberately because, and we'll come back to the detail of it, but immediately, that is a verb that's also a noun. Okay, elders is an adjective term. It's a descriptive term, which we'll come on to and we'll explain just in about 2 minutes. But the idea of shepherding immediately puts into your mind the idea of activity. It is both a role and an activity. And most of you, even if you've never been near a farm, have an idea of what a shepherd does. And so the concept of shepherding, I'm going to labor hard, particularly because the Lord is ascribed here as the chief shepherd. So the accountability that shepherds have is ultimately to another shepherd, our Lord Jesus Christ. So the atmosphere of shepherding, four things that are needed. Now remember, this is the context of 1 Peter 5. We go straight into verse 1 and we find this, that plurality is needed, four things. In the atmosphere of shepherding, plurality is needed. Notice the language, elders, plural. Every time in the New Testament this is referenced, it's plural. Acts 14, Philippians 1, 1 Thessalonians 5, James 5, 1 Peter 5, always plural. Elders never stand alone. There is always plurality. That is not a hidden truth. It's on the surface, but it's important. Any of you who are doing this role and doing it at all well will know that you need your fellow elders. One of the most important things in a local church is the relationship between the shepherds. They will not always be natural personality fits. They will not always see eye to eye in everything. But there's an impact on the flock if the shepherds are not together. There's a plurality expected. Secondly, proximity is needed. Just look at the language, the elders which are among you. Again, this is seen repeatedly in the New Testament. I could take you to many verses. It's the elders who are among God's people. Yes, in role of rule and guidance, there is an over the saints reference point. But I want you to notice that it's the men among God's people. They're close to God's people. This cannot be done at a distance. The shepherd was among the sheep. The elders are among the people. So there's plurality and then there's proximity. But then there is prudence that is needed. There is wisdom required in the leading of God's people. Now that is straight into both the description and the difficulty that we find in 1 Peter chapter 5. It is the reference of elders that is chosen. We'll see there are four reference points that could have been taken. But elders are brought to the fore. The description is this adjective term of those that are mature. Mature relative to the flock. Now remember, it doesn't say here those that are ancient. There is a word for ancient. That's not the word. It's the mature. Remember that in Acts 14, there were elders appointed in churches that were only planted less than 2 years. So elders among God's people, it seems in Titus, likewise, there is a relatively limited time frame between the gospel coming and the pointing out of elders, which Titus was expected to do. It is therefore relative maturity among God's people. It is not until you get to, 60, 70, 80 that you qualify for being an elder. It is relative maturity of the company. And therefore, you have to understand the assembly and the background of the assembly and the makeup of the assembly. And it is not something that men who are ancient qualify for. They're not unqualified by being ancient either. Now, that's really important. Because actually, if we look at the issue of what elders are to do, it does require a lot of energy. And sometimes that is expected of men who really physically would find it, and in fact, in terms of mentally would find it very challenging to do it to the extent with which it appears in the scriptures it's expected to be done. So they're described as being elders. The reason why that is particularly important is because the context of wisdom required is suffering. God's people are in pain. Now, have you got that from 1 Peter? They are pilgrims on the way home. That's the first section of 1 Peter. They are strangers away from home. They are in the midst of fiery trials. The background, of course, is Daniel. Daniel in the second part, it's the exile in Daniel. In the second part of 1 Peter, it's the exodus. In the first part, it's the pilgrim journey in the wilderness. You've got sojourning and you've got strangerhood, two truths that come together. And there is all sorts of pain being away from home. You've read Daniel. It's hard. Being up in Babylon is difficult. That's how the Christians are being seen. There is all manner of opposition to them. There's all manner of problems. Things are not easy. Not only that, there seems to be governmental dealings of God among them. Judgment must begin at the house of God. There is trials both in terms of the externals, but it then seems to be linked with a movement of God among them. And this happens among God's people. Right, here we are. Local churches can go through all sorts of difficulties. And if it's not happening right now, it's just around the corner, okay? It is the history of God's people. It's not easy. Now, what's needed to navigate and to help God's people through all those difficulties are those with wisdom, relative wisdom to the company, elders. So they're described in the context of suffering. So plurality, proximity, and prudence. This is the atmosphere of shepherding. This is what it feels like. There's men together. There's men among God's people together. There's men among God's people together with prudence, with wisdom and understanding. Fourthly, perspective is needed. The shepherds are being called here to be above the circumstances. What happens is God's people get caught up in the difficulties. They get overwhelmed. And the men that are among them leading are called to have a different perspective. Now look at Peter's language in verse 1. He says, "The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder." Now he could have said, "and also a fellow sufferer." I mean, Peter suffered enough. You could spend a bit of time thinking about that. But he doesn't. He says, "a witness of the sufferings of Christ." So first of all, he's able to put suffering in the context. He looks back to Calvary. He says, he's saying to the men who have the responsibility of navigating the saints through this difficulty. He says, "you look backwards and recognize that this is part of Christianity. We follow a suffering Christ." Chapter 1, it's suffering and then glory. There's glory coming. You know, we're in Mark this morning. In Mark 9, we mentioned Mark 9. We'll end up in Mark 9. You know, the kingdom's coming and there's going to be glory. And amen. But between now and then, there's a bumpy road and there's all manner of pain. And God's people have the common pain that comes with being in a fallen creation. But they also have the Christian pain of living righteously in an unrighteous world, suffering for righteousness' sake, as it's described in 1 Peter. So the elders need to have the perspective of, first of all, Christ, the sufferings of Christ. They need to look back and be able to remind the saints, this is where we are, this is where we're going. This is where he was, this is where he is. But look at verse 4. They also have to have the ability to look ahead, to know the chief shepherd's coming. Look back to the suffering and look on to the coming, because the stranger is away from home only so long. And the pilgrim is going home only so long, and then they're home. Now here's the thing, Christians. You need leaders like that. Here's a question. Do you pray for leaders like that? If God's people prayed for their leaders as much as they criticized them, do you know it's really hard to criticize people you're praying for? Have you tried that? He tried that? It's kind of incompatible. So see that brother or sister, this is not on the subject of elders, unless it's the elders that are annoying you. But see that brother or sister that's annoying you. You decide to set yourself to pray for them. And things will dissipate somewhat on your frustrations. These are the men that are needed. Men, it's a high calling. It's a responsible calling. The atmosphere of shepherding. Right, let's then think about the accountability of shepherding, because that's the emphasis in 1 Peter. You have this language three times. You notice that the word steward's not used as it is in Titus 1, but look at the language that's used. Three reference points. First of all, in verse 2, feed the flock of God. Shepherd the flock of God. Secondly, look at verse 3. Don't be lords over God's heritage, God's allotted portion. Thirdly, when the chief shepherd shall appear. Now, do you see the ownership and reference points all the way through there? The accountability of shepherding. It's God's flock. Actually, more specifically, it's a Greek diminutive. In other words, it is something that's being looked of. Actually, you could say little flock. It's more likely the idea of beloved flock. There's something of preciousness. Three things. They are precious to God. They're God's flock. Those that lead, be really clear about this. Those sheep are God's. God's precious flock. They're God's flock. Precious to God. Secondly, they're portioned to you. They are your heritage. They are your allotted portion. And like we've thought about this all weekend, here's an area where God has given into the hands of men a stewardship. Something that they have to hold for him. Something that is implicit with the idea of responsibility to the Lord. An account to be given. If you've not been here the weekend, that word steward used in Titus 1 was the dignified steward, the servant in the house who was over the other servants. He was a servant. But he had servants under him to look after. Local church elders are seen like that. They're precious to God, they're portioned to you, but they're practically for Christ. He is the chief shepherd. Now, this should get any ideas of pride and any swaggering leadership and any notions of promotion and any self-lifting up should be far from us, because we immediately recognize this is a spiritual reality with a shepherd that is over all of God's people. Now, if you look at Christ's likeness, of course, you've got all the shepherd titles of Christ. And they flow throughout the Bible. We can pick them. We very often on Sunday morning would think about them. There are under-shepherds and there's a chief shepherd. Elders are not answerable to other churches. They're answerable to the chief shepherd. Again, I ask, men, it's something we have to think about. You have to think about. Who are you worried about in terms of their assessment? We're back in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Some think Paul's great. Some think he's far less than great. Paul says to all of them, probably particularly those that thought he was great, it's a very small thing that I'm judged by you. It didn't matter at all. Now here's the question, whose assessment matters? If what goes through your head when you're thinking about matters of shepherding is what other people think. Other people in other places, you've missed it. Because you'll stand one day before the chief shepherd, and what they think won't matter. It's only what he thinks. Now we believe, well I believe, and I think you believe too, that a local church is only responsible to the risen Christ. There is no establishment. There is no sphere. There is no authority. There is no power on earth between the local church and the risen Christ. Men will love to put them in place. Men will love to create supra-church organizations or supra-church influence. After the apostolic age, there's a recognition, as Paul handed, in fact, the Ephesian elders in Acts 20. Who does he commend them to? He did not commend them to the elders in Jerusalem. He did not commend them to Timothy as an apostolic delegate following on. He did not believe in apostolic succession. I commend you to God and the word of his grace. Those men in Ephesus with all their need. And you might think it might be handy to nip down to Jerusalem for some help. I'm not saying that God's people can't help each other. I've come all the way from Aberdeen. But I have no authority. And no man that comes from the outside's got authority. Take the Ballymoney Assembly here. The elders that lead the local church here answer only to a risen Christ, the chief shepherd. Now that brings clarity. It brings clarity. But it also brings massive responsibility. Because the fact that something is done somewhere else doesn't give the local elders a pass. They have to be happy that this is the mind of the chief shepherd. Now, do you see the weight of that? You see something of the privilege of that and the weight of it. Now, Hebrews 13 says this. Obey them, Hebrews 13, verse 17. We'll stay in 1 Peter 5 because we're going to be here, but you know the verse, I'm sure. Hebrews 13, 17. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they which must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. They must give account. I love the assumption in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 4 that when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fades not away. Isn't that nice? It's like that with rewards. I'm speaking next Sunday in Riverside back home on the subject of God rewarding his people. And, you know, I could have about 10 meetings on all the passages that tell me about the rewards of God. Please don't think, as I've come across here, there's a kind of grumpy Scotsman come across here and told you about all your responsibilities and made you feel bad. And what you do with your money and your children and all the rest of it and your assembly, you're all made to feel bad. We ought to feel the weight of responsibility, but I love the fact. See, First Corinthians chapter 4, we read it in the first night. There's a massive responsibility, and Paul is only concerned about the judgment day when the Lord will judge and when the Lord will give his verdict. But then he says this, and then every man shall have his praise of God. Here you have here, shepherds are being exhorted. There is a strong demand placed upon them, and I'm doing that today. And by the way, I am also an elder and a fellow shepherd, and I know what it means to fail. And every time a sheep goes astray, you feel and you recognize that your failure is only just public. It's a mighty encouraging thing that the expectation is this, that nonetheless, he didn't put it into your hand because he thought you were perfect. He didn't put it in your hand because, you know, if you didn't do it, then the whole thing would be lost. He's the chief shepherd. He's doing the shepherding. Remember yesterday, Psalm 127, you build as a family, you build as a parent, you build as a father, you build that family, but the effective work is God's. Except the Lord build the house, he labor in vain that build it. The Lord's shepherding his people. You are just a channel, but you will give an account. Now, God's people are meant to recognize that. They're meant to submit themselves so that the elders may do their work of watching, with joy and not with grief. Here we are, right, off the elders for a second. Let me speak to sheep. Are you a grief to the elders? Do you cause them problems? Or do you try all you can to follow them, to submit to them? Now, let's get on to this next point, activity of shepherds, number three. And there are two key verbs in 1 Peter chapter 5. Notice the language, verse 2, first word, shepherd the flock of God. Second clause in verse 2, taking the oversight therewith. Now, there we are, shepherding and oversight. Now, they are verbs in 1 Peter 5. The word shepherd there, or pastoring, as it's described in some translations, is also an action verb, a verb, in Acts 20. But it's a noun in Ephesians 4. An overseer is a noun in Titus 1 and Acts 20. That is, they are both a designation, they are both a named reference point. So you can refer to overseers and shepherds and elders and stewards, because they're all those things. By the way, you put together Titus 1, Acts 20, 1 Peter chapter 5, there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that elders are shepherds, are overseers, are stewards. They are all the same people. Now, just to be clear, that is not hard. Like, expositionally, it's not hard. I do some Bible study. Some of you do as well. There are hard things in the Bible. There really are hard things in the Bible. That's not hard. That they are the same people. That they are names and activities that exactly the same people are doing. Therefore, the simplicity of local church, where elder-led, where the elders are the same people as the shepherds, pastors, the same people as the overseers, as the stewards, it's different names for the same people. That's the biblical pattern. Anything else is addition to the word, and it is not helpful in the working out of the purpose of God in the local church. I'll give you an example back home. A brother I know really well, who's in a church where there are eight leaders, four are called pastors, they're the ones that are paid, four that are called elders, the ones that are not paid. They believe that all of them, constitutionally they believe that all of them have the same role and authority. This is a different title because one's paid, one's not. And he told me once when I was talking to him that it's really frustrating because the saints, if somebody gets ill, they feel as if they've been kind of shortchanged if they get an elder, not a pastor. And he was remonstrating to me about the fact that we believe they're all the same. Why are the saints unhappy if an elder comes and not a pastor? Well, don't call them different things. It might help. Confusion, Jack Hunter used to say, that linguistic confusion leads to doctrinal confusion. Language matters. I'm not condemning people. They're very well-intentioned. The brother I'm talking about is a lovely brother and works extremely hard. But Christians, keep it simple. Your shepherds are your elders, are your overseers. But the activity is emphasized by the fact that these are verbs. So elder's not a verb, right? You can't eld. Yes, you with me? You don't do elding. It's a descriptive term of maturity. But you do steward, and specifically in terms of verbs, you do shepherd and you do oversee. Now, shepherd is the critical term here. It's the first one that comes out of the blocks in verse 2, shepherd the flock of God. Now, Peter learned all about this because he was called, remember, in his restoration to feed, to shepherd, to feed the Lord's lambs, the Lord's sheep. And he is now passing on what he was instructed to do, and he says, shepherd, shepherd the flock of God. You must, it's an aorist active imperative if you're doing grammar, you must actively shepherd the sheep. Now that is rich, you know, I would rather that the Christians refer to their leaders as shepherds. Because in active terms, we don't tend to think in the same way as those in the East about elders. And the idea of shepherding, because it's an active word, has all manner of implicit helpful ideas. You straight away, when you refer to men as shepherds, which is biblical, Pastors might confuse the life out of you because it's a word you don't use very much. But shepherds, which is the word, you're immediately thinking about a man who's interested in the diet of the sheep. They are concerned about what you're feeding on. Hey, they might even ask you, what are you feeding on? That'd be a good question for a shepherd to ask. The diet of the sheep matters. The direction of the sheep matters. That's what shepherds do. They're actively concerned to where they're going. Shepherds have an interest in what you're feeding on and where you're going. Shepherds have an interest in the disease of the sheep. What's got wrong with them? How can they be made better? Now, it's implicit in the word, which is why it's helpful to reference them. If you refer to them as shepherds, it's not unbiblical to call them elders, but it's biblical to call them shepherds. Now, you'll understand that this was always, all throughout the Bible, a reference point for the leaders of God's people. The elders in Israel were called shepherds. They're described exactly like that. In Ezekiel 34, the shepherd failures. You want some post-meeting study? Look at Ezekiel 34, 11 to 16, and the Lord outlines the failure of the shepherds in Israel. The king was described as a shepherd, but the plurality of elders over the nation were described as shepherds, and they failed the sheep. And sadly, many local church shepherds could also have their rap sheet read out of the failure of shepherding. They didn't feed the flock. They didn't make them lie down safely. They didn't seek those that were lost. They didn't bring again that which was driven away. They didn't bind up that which was broken. That's the activity of a shepherd. Now, we're thinking here about accountability. And men, I feel it as I'm teaching it, right? But let's be clear. The Lord is going to ask us, as those that lead God's people, how did you shepherd them? What did you feed them? What happened when they got diseased? Did you go out to find them when they were driven away? Did you bind them up when they were broken? Shepherding. Secondly, there's oversight. Overseers. Take the oversight. Actively oversight or oversee. If elder's the man of maturity and the steward is the man of responsibility and shepherd is the man of sensitivity, then the overseer is the man of activity. He's the man who is with a detailed interest in the overseeing of the flock. It's the idea of looking over. There's the idea of foresight, of taking an interest in. Careful consideration of the details of the flock. Shepherds take oversight. Now, three terms. Three terms that are actively expressive of these two reference points, all right? If you need to sum up what a local church leader, elder, shepherd does, three things. I'm going to give them to you, so take them down. Their attention, first of all, Acts 20, verse 28, we won't turn to it, but just I'll read it to you. They have to take heed. Take heed, therefore, unto yourselves and to all the flock. Take heed. Secondly, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5, their attitude, they have to take care. If any man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Take heed, take care. Thirdly, they need to take the lead. This is the quotation of 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17. Let the elders that rule well, Darby's translation, let the elders who take the lead among you be well esteemed, worthy of double honor. Right, those three things. Do you get that? What are you looking for in your leaders? For those that take heed, take care, and take the lead. They're alert. They're looking over God's people. They ought to be anticipating. Their attention is to the concern for the flock. They take care. Literally, the word means to take forethought. So when it comes to what's being taught, there's an active interest in what the saints are being taught. So it's not just a case of, well, we've finished Ezekiel. When you last finished Ezekiel? You finished Ezekiel, so what will you do now? Ask yourself, what do the saints need? Yes, they need the Bible. But what specifically do the saints need? First of all, they need a diet that is varied. They need a variety of teaching. They need a depth of teaching, different types of ministry. I'm very glad in the local church where I am privileged and blessed to be part of, the Lord has raised up teachers. We have six teachers who teach the Bible. And between them, between us, we're able to cover ground. But the elders have to decide what ground we're covering. You take forethought for need. Times change. Culture changes. The needs change. Specific circumstances the saints are going through. But they also need to take the lead. Now, this is particularly where it gets hard. And if you're in 1 Peter chapter 5, which we are, it gets particularly hard. Take the lead well. They have to be the men out in front. Look at the language of verse 3. They are to be examples to the flock. They take heed, they take care, they take the lead. Christians, if you ever get close to an elder or a shepherd, you should understand that it's a lonely place being out in front. But you're called upon men who lead to be the example for the flock. Now, in the specific context of 1 Peter 5, what that means is this. You're facing suffering. Suffering for righteousness. What's Peter saying? He's saying, men, all of these sheep have got their eye on you. All of them have got their eyes on you. The fiery trial, chapter 4, the fiery trial is being undertaken. Judgment begins at the house of God. It's a painful road and it's hard. He says, men, what the saints need is to see you handle it well. Now, that's why in verse 1, he doesn't say, I'm also an elder and a fellow sufferer. Because he's saying, men, don't be like me. See, Peter was the leader, eh? They all looked to Peter. And whatever Peter did, they did. And his failure was obvious for all to see. And the Lord says, I've prayed for you. Sainted wanted to have them all. I've prayed for you. Now here's the thing. In all the circumstances of a local church, whatever they are, here it's fiery trial. The elders are asked to be out in front. Now you see, the average believer, I think, when they think about what a local church elder or shepherd does, they don't think about taking heed and taking care and taking the lead. They think about taking decisions. Well, they get to decide what color the carpet is, or who comes for teaching, or who comes for gospel meetings and when. And they decide times of meetings. I'm not saying you don't make decisions, men, but that's not your big role. If any of the saints have the idea that it's a promoted post you get to so you can start making the calls, if that's the attitude or that's the thought process, you're a million miles away from New Testament church leadership. They take the lead. They're out in front. Now, just like Peter, the men out in front are particularly vulnerable. Now, I call again for you to pray for them. And they will not be perfect. And they will make mistakes. But have a little bit of humility. When I was young, which is not now, And I used to come to the elders with my problems. You ever do that? Come with your problems. Not my problems, you know, their problems that I was pointing out. I was helping them with their problems. I was pointing out things. And there was a wise brother, a wise shepherd among them. They were great men. I ended up shepherding with them for many years. And I learned quite a lot over those years. But they handled me really well. They could have crushed me. But this brother particularly talked to me and explained. He asked me what I would do. He asked me why. The elders weren't untouchable. They were accessible. And he dealt with, you know, a young man who didn't know anything like as much as he thought he did. And handled me in such a way as I was never put off. Take the lead. Now that means actively, you know, one of the things, elders can be seen as those that take decisions. They also can be those that in practice take cover. Because the easiest thing to not be criticized for is not do anything. Because if you do nothing, you can't be criticized. Men, you're out in front. That's your calling. If you're a shepherd and you take the place of an overseer among God's people, you need to be out in front as an example to the flock, whatever the circumstances. You show them where to go. You show them the example. And the question and the challenge for all of the shepherds is this: if the saints were just as you are, what would the assembly be like? Now, finally, that's the activity of shepherding, the authority of shepherding. They are not to, verse 3, lord it over God's heritage. Now, here's the danger. The danger is, there's threefold dangers, interrelated dangers, and we have them today. There are cultural issues. There was clearly an issue in the local churches in the New Testament with submission. We have a cultural issue which rejects authority. It's always been that way in the flesh. But particularly in our culture right now, there's a cultural issue. That makes shepherding hard. Just to be clear, it's hard. There is a past generation which was used to unquestioning following. If the elder said something, people followed. Because that's what happened in culture. If people in authority said something, you did it. It doesn't work anymore. God's people aren't dictated to like lords. The message should never have come down. This is it. Do it. They're guided. More than that, they're shown. There's a cultural issue. There's a carnality issue because the flesh hates authority. There's also a culpability issue because some shepherds historically did reign like lords in the local church. And it was a shame. But the language is quite clear. There is implicit authority in the idea of the shepherd. And that reference point in Hebrews 13, obey them that have the rule over you, is really clear. There's an expectation of obedience to rule, which is all about leadership and about authority. Now, I will notice this, that there's a confidence expected. That word obey has the idea of yielding with confidence. So, men, this is the point, that people will follow you and they will submit to you in your authority, but you have to make it as easy for them as possible by showing them who you are and why you're doing what you're doing so they can have confidence in you. Saints want to know that you care. Show them that you care. If they know that you care, then when you make decisions and you guide them and you direct them in a way that maybe they don't understand, they should be able to say this: I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I can't understand it all, and I don't have all the information, but I know this. I can trust these men. That's the expectation of Hebrews 13. They taught them the word. They led them and they guided them. And so the call is to have confidence in them and then to submit. It's linked with the idea, notice in Hebrews 13, that they watch for your souls. Here's the thing. This is for shepherds. Please think about this. Would the saints listen to you more and follow you better if they genuinely believed that you were up in the night praying for them? For your souls. That's the challenge. And if you're struggling getting the sheep to follow, maybe ask the question, do they think? First of all, is it true? And secondly, would the saints know that you care for their soul so much that sometimes you have sleepless nights? You see, that's the New Testament expectation. Now, if any of the elders in here are thinking, fabulous, no problem, I've ticked all those boxes, so thanks for coming, but it's all clear. All of us have a lot of room to grow and a lot of room to run. You see, when God puts a responsibility into our hands like that, he does it with expectations. He's given money, riches, he's given goods into our hands. We asked the first session question of what we're doing with it. Not enough to not just waste it. What are you doing with it? If he's put family into your hands, what are you doing with them? He has put gift into everyone's hands. What are you doing with it? Shepherds, if he's given a flock into your hands, it's quite likely that none of us have really held that with the kind of understanding of these verses that we've gone through. By the way, I'm going back to my fellow elders. We've talked about it this week. We had 3 hours together on Tuesday night, and we're going to meet again to discuss some of this stuff, because when you come back into looking at stuff afresh in the Bible and truth hits you again, you need to go back over things. What are we doing? Are we doing it enough? Are we praying enough? Are we leading well enough? They're the flock of God. They're the heritage put into the hands of men to lead that will one day answer to the chief shepherd. Respect your elders, your shepherds, pray for them. Do all you can to yield to them. Shepherds, help them by showing that you care, by standing out in front, by being an example to the flock, and make it easy for them to submit. May the Lord bless his word.